I mean, there's also very few things these days that are live, like theater, right? So I think that's the cool part, is like it's you still have the stress of live, right? And that's an interesting like pressure that you feel, but it's kind of like thrilling, right, in many ways.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Business of Entertainment podcast. This podcast is dedicated to shining light on those who work behind the scenes in film, TV, theater, and live events. Today's episode focuses on Jason Scott and his role as a choreographer for dance. I first got to know Jason near the end of 2020 when he sent me an email looking for help putting together three virtual productions that turned into 14 over a three-year period. Jason is an absolute legend, and I'm excited to share with you now his story and involvement with dance. Enjoy. So for those that don't know, because I'm supposed to give this to a broader audience than just you and I, this is Jason. Jason and I worked together on some demo days at Google for Startups, where accelerator videos are... where accelerator programs come to an end. They have a graduation day where they do a pitch, and there's 12 presenters, 12 startups, and there's about an hour and a half of video that goes into the final product that is shown on YouTube. And so we've done 9 of them so far, and now we're gonna do you and I another 2 before you're out of here, and then But anyways, along the way, you had told me you'd done musical theater. I got into entertainment through lighting 10 years ago. And when I hear music, I close my eyes, I can picture shapes of light and color. And I just listen to the chorus, listen to when the song's, you know, getting a little like smaller, when the song goes big, and how would that look like on a stage? I just literally close my eyes and picture that. So I really know nothing about what you've done in musical theater, and would just love to hear what you've done, how you got into it, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So I guess to take it all the way back, so I started at so I went to undergrad at MIT in Boston, and part of that was I had been doing a lot of dance previously, and kind of more recreationally. Dance is pretty expensive if you're taking classes and things like that. So it'd be more of like a weekend trip to New York and take some classes at Broadway Dance Center, or maybe do school related things. I'd done a lot of school musicals and things like that growing up. And more so as an interesting avenue to combine both my past experience in dance and also my past experience doing a lot of kind of singing and choir and thing like that growing up. And so it was kind of that perfect storm. And so at MIT, though, I had figured out the most effective way or cost effective way to do dance and cost effective way to do kind of theater was to join audition for and join professional company. And so I like took the plunge in my freshman year. I actually remember auditioning for a company in Boston that did a lot of dance production, a lot of competitive dance, as well as some theater production as well. And so I honestly didn't think that the audition went that well, but I think someone maybe saw something in me and they like gave me a chance and let me join. And from there, it kind of just expanded. By the time I graduated undergrad, I was doing maybe 3 hours a day of rehearsals, either me choreographing things or me learning things or guest instructors coming through Boston, et cetera. And so that cumulatively would turn into kind of 3 hours a day on the weekdays. And then we would spend entire weekends where we would go to New York and like I said, go to Broadway Dance Center and do a lot of classes and things like that. But then I had actually taken a pause a couple years after graduating. I was still kind of doing it, but it was hard to do both with work and doing this kind of as a side hobby, but professional kind of side hobby. But then when I went to grad school, it was really awesome that people might laugh at this, but Stanford, actually, the grad school, they do this big musical production that's kind of a mockery of tech, which is really funny. Yeah, imagine kind of Silicon Valley, the TV show, the kind of mocking tech, but like in musical theater version. And so it was interesting for me because that like combines my worlds, right? Like I work in tech, I've always been in tech. I do think that tech can sometimes be something that, I mean, obviously with all the Netflix specials and things coming out, they could be, it could be really entertaining because of all the just the weirdness that is the tech world.
Yeah, Netflix really knew, like, figured out documentaries. They figured out how to get people hooked in documentaries.
100%. And but the thing is, there's so much material, right? Like, if you think about it. And so I actually got involved in helping produce and choreograph my first year of grad school, and then did it again my second year of grad school. And then after I graduated, I was like, hey, like, it seems like this perfect storm, this middle of the Venn diagram of musical theater, dance, and kind of tech is like one where it felt like a great fit, right? Where I could kind of, transparently meet and network with a lot of people in tech, and people that I would collaborate with, either startup founders or people that work at big tech like Google, et cetera, but then also come together in a way that's expressing ourselves and connecting outside of kind of our work, right? Like, it's like awesome to meet these people who work in startups or work at Google or work in investing, but mm-hmm. we're connecting over something that is on the artistic side, right? And we're bonding over something on the artistic side. And so for me, that's what I kept doing. And so in San Francisco, we actually had this musical that we ran called South of Market, which is an area of San Francisco, for those that aren't familiar, but South of Market Street, but South of Market, and it was literally just a parody of San Francisco in many ways. It ended up being a big hit. It was funny. We did it, honestly, we were all volunteering the first time we did it. We didn't even want to pay ourselves. We just wanted to put together this great show, but we ended up selling out. The show was completely sold out.
That's cool.
In the second year, we ended up having to do it for 2 weeks of productions because of how popular it became. And honestly, that for me, again, like I said, was kind of the optimal way to combine those worlds, because the reason I ended up at Google was that one of the other producers was actually working at Google, working in startup programs. And she had said, hey, like, there's this role at Google that you might find fits your goals and fits your needs in terms of what you want to do for your career. And that it went from there. But but also a couple of the founders I've invested in were part of that production. So it's just really interesting how those worlds kind of, we all combined our worlds, our loves of dance and production and musical theater and tech to really bond and create kind of this community.
Well, can I take it back from what something you talked about? I have so many things I want to say, but let's take it back to the first thing. I want to ask you about, like, what type of dancing were you first into? Because I have a kid in dancing right now, and I'm wondering, is classical dancing what she wants to do? Is it, you know, going to be hip hop? Or I don't know if I'm starting in the right place, or if it's just that starting is a way that hopefully she'll take it in a way that she wants to.
Yeah. So to answer that first question around what I like most, it's interesting because I actually wrote, kind of bringing it back to grad school again, like wrote my essays. There's this famous kind of prompt for Stanford Business School, what matters most and why. And for me, it was the answer was helping people lead happier, healthier lives. And on the happier side, like part of what I enjoy about dance and just general is performing is generally just helping people put a smile on people's faces, right? Entertaining. Like I enjoy that a lot, right? And same thing with the demo days we were talking about earlier and all of these other things. Like, it's just always fun to kind of...
A live audience is... If you don't go ever to a live show, whether it's a concert, a theatrical performance, dance recital, something, if you're not participating in the live audience, you don't understand what that's like to even be there. Or if you're part of the crew, what it's like to like wait for the audience's reaction and have them enjoy the fruits of your labor.
For sure.
It's so unique.
For sure. And like also creating a production is very similar to creating a company, right? It's really awesome to kind of create something that people are willing to pay for, right? Or people are, are willing to kind of go advocate for and go tell their friends about and stuff like that. So there's like something about the creativity aspect as well. So the combination of those two things. But then going back to your question around types, I think similar to how I feel about, I think my approach to my career and like many other things in my life, I think the sampler platter model is great, like to sample a bunch of things and then see which things feel right. Is I think of it as like A/B testing. It's like, okay, this one I like better than this one. Okay, let's try something. Okay, this one I like better than this one. And then like ultimately kind of find your niche. And so I think same thing. I actually, it's funny, my mom actually had that approach for me also with sports when I was growing up. She kind of just made me try everything and kind of figure out which one fit. And so I think it's similar model, right? But then ultimately, it's interesting because I think now you see a lot more like styles and things kind of blending and stuff like that. So I think there's no wrong place to start.
I believe that if you don't ever start, you'll never start. I mean, I guess that's a dumb way to put it, but yeah, anywhere is a good starting point to find out what you like and what you don't like. With me in lighting, the reason I transitioned more to like theater and like rock and roll and live performances and things like that was because television and film kind of have seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously television has season, then there's like a season windows of when films will shoot. They don't always shoot in the nicest parts of the year and the most comfortable parts that you can film in. So I would be looking for work usually during the summer when mm-hmm. a lot of people are on vacation. And I got recommended to a rock and roll touring group that then had me on one thing. And then they recommended me to another company that needed help with a convention setup for an expo. So it kind of just out of necessity of needing a paycheck, I was like, all right, well, I have some skills. I know what a light is. I get height, angle, intensity, color, and shape. So I was like, all right, let's figure out how to do it this way.
Yeah.
People are also such great humans, right? It's always kind of great to kind of connect with people in ways that aren't just our day-to-day work jobs and things like that. And so working jobs and stuff. And so like for me, I've kind of veered away from doing it. I actually found that when I was doing it, most recently doing it for money, like teaching and things like that for secondary income, it did take a lot of the joy out of it for me, right? And it also there's this interesting pressure of knowing that like people are paying you to do it, right? Versus like when I'm volunteering, it's actually funny. I like feel a lot more liberty to take artistic freedoms and just
they're just happy you're there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm volunteering. I'm gonna do something out of the box, right? I'm gonna do something that I think is fun or funny or kind of new or novel, right? Versus mm-hmm. like the pressure of, oh, they're paying me to do this production or to teach this class, etc. So I need to make sure that people get what they expected, right? Which is interesting though, because I actually feel like in the times that I volunteer, the output ends up being even better, right? Because it ends up allowing me to think outside the box or do something kind of that I maybe wouldn't have, take a risk that I wouldn't have taken previously.
Well, I think it's also that you're having a good time. I realized that there are going to be bad days in entertainment, but there are going to be some great days. So you really have to accept those stressful days with the good days. But more to your point of what you were talking about with the pressure aspect, I like that pressure. For me, it's not pressure. For me, it's more of, even with like the smaller shows that I've done, I will take home after the initial meeting with the director and having seen the location, the space, and also having seen a rehearsal, I will go home and just put on music and start going over the script like little by little. All right, so this is scene one. This is scene one, two. Like this is like start breaking it down into my head as to where these things go, and then I will start mapping out in my computer what lights need to be where. And then I will start programming lighting cues without lights. I will literally just have like, okay, so the first lighting cue on my board is going to be pre-show lighting. Then second cue is house to half. Third is blackout. Fourth is the initial lighting cue for the lights to come up. And the fifth is usually like I usually like to bring them in sequential where they'll just follow like, parts of the light get bright and then the rest of the stage gets bright. Like, so it's like a little bright, a little bright, a little bright. And then it just kind of, depending on what it is, maybe you just need a spotlight in one spot. But so it's like the first five cues. And then after that, I go into the script and look around and say, like, okay, so this is what's going to happen based on the rehearsals. And this is the mood that's feeling. And about 75% of that work, I will program a show, not in its most finite entirety, and I'm not working with timing. I'm just working with general looks for the set and the show based on where I've already conceptualized things in my head. And 75 to 85% of what I do before I get to the show, without even using a 3D visualization software, makes it into the show. And I love knowing that I'm coming to the first tech day way more prepared. No one's going to be waiting on me to build a million lighting cues. I don't need to be here till 3 a.m. No one is saying, hey, why is lights taking so long? So to me, being able to sit and enjoy some of that during my own time, and then come more prepared to production, that I love that. Even if it's a smaller show, I'll put in the same effort if I really want to be a part of the show.
Yeah. So the thing though, for me, that's interesting is like, because yeah, I agree. I think that when, so I think of it this way, you have a show and you have your stakeholders. The show with the production, oftentimes a lot of your stakeholders, particularly if the ones that are paying you, tend to be the people, the production side, right? So the directors, right, the producers, et cetera. However, for me, in similar to a product and being an entrepreneur and creating a company, what I care more about are the users, right? Like, so I think of it as like, if you're starting a company, same thing. You can take capital and have your investors, but at the end of the day, you're trying to build for your users. And so for me, I think the interesting thing is when I'm not taking capital. So as an entrepreneur, if I'm relating this to an entrepreneur, but if I'm relating it to this, when I'm not getting paid, I am more likely to do high risk, high reward type of things for my users, which is the audience, right? I'm more likely to like not feel the pressure to just do what's prescribed or what I think that the production team or the director and the producers do exactly what I think they would want, because I know in that case, like again, I'm volunteering, so I'm going to do something that I think will be a high risk, high reward thing for our users, right? And I think at the end of the day, of course, I mean, high risk is high risk, so of course there is a risk that I fail in those cases and it ends up being bad. But I think ultimately, what's interesting is like there have been some cases where I've done things that are way outside of my own comfort zone, right? And they've actually paid off quite well in terms of the final product of the production, right?
And this is choreography?
Yeah, for sure. When it comes to choreography or just thinking about the integration of choreography, because the interesting thing as a choreographer in particular, and you feel this with light production, I'm sure as well, because I've also worked a lot with lighting to kind of balance that with choreography, but in musicals in particular, sometimes they blend together, right? So sometimes you can have a scene that is like, I'm just choreographing the movement of that scene, because it goes in and out of kind of song and script and things like that, right? So I'm like,
it's got waves to it.
Exactly. And there are some productions that I've done where you call it choreography, but I'm basically just staging the entire thing, right? Because like, so it's so musical that there's no real like distinction between Hamilton's a great example, right? Like the musical Hamilton is music the whole way through, right? There's no like pause. And so the choreographer for Hamilton literally is basically staging the whole thing for the most part, right? Because there's like, it's constantly happening. And so there've been productions like that where I'm working very, very closely with the director in particular, as well as the music, et cetera, just to make sure that it feels continuous and it feels seamless, because I'm not just doing choreography, I'm also staging the musical and kind of placing the people, right? And telling the story through their physical, what's the word I'm looking for? Just telling the story through them physically, right? Like in terms of like where they're standing, their positioning, et cetera. And so, like there have been times where I've taken a lot of risks. Like one time I remember doing one where it was, again, the one that was like a Silicon Valley parody musical. And I was like, what if we did the whole first scene which was, I guess you would call it dance, but like dance plus kind of just general staging, with everyone having iPads, right, in their head. Because the whole thought process there was that tech was all consuming. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the story that the director and the producers wanted and the writers wanted to tell. And so I was like, oh, well, like one way to do that is like, if no one ever breaks like eye contact with the iPads, right? Yeah. Like the screens. And so I literally did the whole opening with choreographed movement and staging where every character never broke eye contact with their screens, right? And so like that sort of thing.
That's cool.
Is something I wouldn't. I mean, who's to say? I mean, maybe I would have taken the risk and maybe I would have, but like, I definitely felt more empowered to take that risk because I was like, let me just do something outside the box. Like, I'm going to put something on stage and I'm going to put in work, but it's a matter of how risky is the work that I'm doing and how risky is how much creative freedom do I feel like I have?
In terms of big risks, there was I just thought about this. In terms of big risks, I was doing a show of Hauptmann and mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Hauptmann, but it was there was a graveyard. It's about the Lindbergh baby that was kidnapped in the early 1900s. And this play is about that. And two of the people are meeting in a graveyard to talk about this. And what I had originally done was there was this backlight, this deep purple with blue ice backlight that I created. And that was the only light for the scene. There was no front lighting. And on one of the days at the beginning of that scene, my lighting board, the electricity for my lighting board shut off.
Oh, no. Like,
the sound was working. The soundboard was lit up like a Christmas tree, like it should be. But I finally got the lights back on. The board went back to the exact same cue it was in. And the lights came back on before the end of that scene. People during intermission were like, wow, that was a brave choice. And me and the director were freaking out the whole time, like we just ruined the show. And everyone was like, that was cool. And she then apologized to everybody after intermission. Sorry about that. And I was like, why'd you tell people? They thought it was on purpose.
Yeah, they get some purpose. Yeah.
Take credit.
Well, that's right. You always like, well, not always, but I think I oftentimes try not to let the user know, or the audience know, the user in this case is the audience know that something wasn't intentional, because oftentimes they don't even notice, right? Like sometimes like we've usually by the actual time that something is premiered or released, like we know, we've seen it a million times, we know I know when every light's supposed to go on and I'm not even involved, right? Like those sorts of things. And so I think but I think the key is to remember that they aren't as close to it, and they're seeing it all once, right? And like it's like, I mean, take the Hamilton example, right, that we had. It's like it moves so fast that like if they were to miss a word one night,
I wouldn't even
know.
No
one would notice. No one would notice.
I here's the thing. At this point, I would probably know, because I saw the show, I got the book.
Yeah.
Read the book. I got the album, memorized the album, got the mixtape album, memorized that, reread the book, and have watched the musical again, but on digital form. I would probably notice.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm obsessed beyond normality.
Yep.
With that.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. Like the regular audience isn't. They never really know. They're just there and like, okay.
I definitely, I mean, similarly, I've seen it a million times, but it also is happening so fast, right? And so like, I think,
oh, for musicals, for sure.
And hopefully there's so many other things happening that you are, like usually there's so many things, whether it's the lighting, the lyrics, the staging, the props, et cetera. There's so many things on stage, right? And so like the nice part is like you have all of these things happening at the same time. And so like a lot of times like good lighting can distract me from like something going wrong on the sound side or something going wrong on the script side or some prop not happening, right? Because they're all kind of happening in unison. And so like there's plenty to kind of I don't want to use the word distract, but distract the audience from the few mistakes that might happen.
We did rumors here a few months, about a year ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was about a year ago. And during the show, one of the actors leaves the stage very abruptly through the front door, slammed the door, and the painting on the wall just fell down. Audience broke out laughing for a few minutes. And we were just backstage going, someone's got to get that off the stage.
I know.
So anyway. one of the actors who was technically still upstairs, we I don't remember if we radioed to him or walked around, but we're like, when you come downstairs, grab the painting and walk it off the set. Theater just has those moments that you don't get anywhere else. There's no cut. There's no take it from the top. There is the show's going on. The audience is not going to stop looking, and you just got to go.
I mean, there's also very few things these days that are live, like theater, right? So I think that's the cool part, is like, it's, you still have the stress of live, right? And that's an interesting like pressure that you feel, but it's kind of like thrilling, right? In many ways.
Mm-hmm. The pressure I feel if I've run a show, operating the lighting board, mm-hmm. and I'm on the we're on the last scene and I haven't missed a cue, it mm-hmm. comes into my head, you've done this show perfectly. Don't mess up the last seven cues. I'm just paying attention now more wholeheartedly to the last seven cues than I probably have been all show to the other cues. Cause I'm like, yeah. Here it goes. Yep, here it goes. And then I'm just like, don't mess. The one thing that theater has really taught me, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering how this applies to you with other aspects of your life. The one thing that theater has taught me is timing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the amount of the tightness of timing in theater is so precise and involving so many different moving things and people and lights and sounds and everything that it's like I just feel like my I don't know, my focus and timing on certain things is more heightened. I don't mm-hmm. know how you feel or if you can apply how you.
Yeah,
apply
that. I mean, I think timing is one. I think also, I think generally the ability to tell a story through not just words, right? I think that's also something that has come across. So like, I think for me is I've become like through little things, through movement, through lighting, through all this, like convey an emotion or feeling through nonverbal cues, I think is something that has been big for me coming out of that. I think timing, I think also not just timing, but also the ability to move. I don't even say in unison, because we're not all moving in unison, but like you're one piece in this mm-hmm. large moving puzzle, and to kind of like coordinate your own timing, right, with everyone else's and kind of like be in sync. I think that's something as well that I think, you have to be so conscious of everyone else and kind of and read off of everyone else. And like, and again, like going back to those nonverbal cues, I think there's so much like nonverbal that you get both from being able to put together production and like convey those feelings, but also like read and vibe off of everyone else as part of that production, right? Because yeah. To your point, when the picture falls off the wall, knowing how to like move forward and who's going to do it, right, and be able to do that without a lot of like a full discussion, right, and kind of yeah. read and build off of other people, I think is huge for me.
You are going to be leaving Google,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to be starting your own startup.
Mm-hmm.
These skills that you've learned in theater. Can you touch more on how they're helping you?
Yeah, I mean,
with confidence, or I mean, you just now touched on like the movements and relationships. Yeah. How do you think these skills are translating?
All of that stuff, right? One, like high stakes conversations. To your point, like being able to like build off of things that are live and kind of go with the flow of things. I think whether it's me raising money to start a business or trying to get people to use your business or customers or startups, et cetera, right? But then secondarily, I think from a management standpoint, right, and leading, I think there's a lot of that you learn from like a leadership standpoint when you're putting together production, because you're, there are certain people that you can tell what to do. There's certain people you have to work really, you have to lead laterally, right? Or peer, I call it, like with your peers, and upward as well, right? And like, and so I think that all come, that all applies in the business world too. It's like, how do you get people to, how do you influence people and build off of people sometimes without authority, right? Or sometimes when they have many other options. And so like, I think there's a lot there.
When they have many other options.
They do, right? And so, yeah, I would say a lot of that moves over to the working world. Question for you now though, where do you see yourself kind of going into any of those specialties more so, or kind of where, what's next for you in that journey?
I just want to do lighting design for now. And if I have the money in the future, throw some money and executive produce a show.
Have you thought about combining that, like I, as I was mentioning earlier, kind of the combination of that plus the kind of world, the tech world and kind of the Google world, et cetera. Have you thought about combining those, if at all?
To a point. I mean, I get to work on some, in terms of lighting itself, the studio in here in Tel Aviv, in when I first got here, they wanted to know my thoughts on the studio. And I was like, what do you mean my thoughts? And I just look at the studio, talk to us about it in a month. We'd like to hear what you think about the studio. And I came back with them and I said, well, it could benefit from a few more lights by doing this, this, and this. I showed them like, here's a proposal. This is how much I want to spend. And I wound up basically designing the new light grid that's in our studio here, and being able to see on a continual basis how other startups benefit from that. So yeah, that's,
well, I was gonna say also, like to your point that you mentioned, you've in some ways developed a kind of a niche, now I wouldn't even say competency, but a well, kind of a competency, right, of doing what you do but applying it to startups, accelerators, etc., right? So I guess part of my question was also like, do you to your point, like a lot of the playbooks and things like that haven't even, weren't even established right on how to do that sort of stuff, like digitally in particular. And so curious, like how you could apply that more broadly, or if you wanted to, right? Similar to what I was saying earlier.
I try and use the skills that I have and teach them to give these to other startups. I understand the process of the content creation process. Like I understand from development all the way to distribution. Where when they come to me and say, hey, we want to do this, I don't tell them, do X, do Y, do Z, put this here, put that there, it's going to look beautiful. Because then it's my work, it's not their work. And what I try and do is actually teach storytelling, digital storytelling, as a skill to these startups that come in here that need help. Where when they say, I want to shoot something, I don't know what I want it to look like, I have no idea what I'm doing, and I don't know how to turn on a camera. I love that, because if someone's enthusiastic enough and wants to create it, they're going to go through the process of figuring out how to do it. But I start them off on a path of think about, all right, so tell me what, I ask them questions like, what is it, what's the demographic you're trying to reach? Do you have other visual aids that you can show me that help reach your audience? Do you have other examples of commercials, product shots, videos, explainers that are similar to what you were thinking of a concept? Okay, great. So what is your messaging? Well, my messaging is this, 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 and this. Okay. So where do you think, based on your ideas, how do you think your ideas could fit within, you know, here, and walk them through that? And then once they have an idea of that, then I tell them, all right, go ahead and write out everything you want to say. Doesn't matter if it's too long or too short, write out everything you want to say. And then compare that to the visuals that you have. And in your head, you got to think about, does this visual make sense with these words? It's a very simple thing. The wolf huffed and puffed and blew a house down. I don't know if that's copyrighted. I'm trying to think of something not copyrighted. Everyone's going to know.
I think you twisted it a little bit enough that it wouldn't be.
So if I then have a visual with those words of someone sitting at a computer desk working on post-production, that might not necessarily make sense in context. So it's about trying to help them match up, you know, all those things. And then if they want to refine the text, like I'll help them walk through refining the text. And, you know, if this is too much fat or this is too much. And if they say I want to do 60 seconds and they want my opinion on the script, and I can clearly see they give me 3 pages of text, I'm like, it's way too long. I would give them suggestions of, you could cut here, move this up, switch these around. And then how do the visuals that you have thought of also work with that? All right, so if these are, this is what you kind of want it to look like, let's maybe draw something out. So I help them with a little bit of storyboarding, you know, just stick figures. Here's a piece of paper, here's a head, here's a person sitting, standing or sitting or whatever they're doing in the frame. And these are the visuals that we need to have in the frame. Are we going to do them in like in camera, or are they going to be digitally? If they're done digitally, it can, we can shoot this much faster with more mistakes, because we can do pickup shots. And then you just add that in digitally later. So there's different options for that. And then I can help them through the edit process. Once they get the first edit, I always tell people, I hate watching even my own first edits. I know that they're bad. Remember the Google Voice AI intro?
Yep.
Okay, that was originally like almost a minute. And it was supposed to be like, what, 10 seconds?
Yep.
Yeah, that is way too long, and all the information you need is on the other end, and that needs to come over here. I then refined it, and got it down to like the 15-second Google Voice AI intro, re-recorded a few things, and that's what we saw. So yeah, I try and walk people through it like that, and I say to first edit, don't expect too much out of the first edit other than take it in, put it away for a day, and then come back to it and write down notes, because the first edit's usually not gonna be a home run.
For sure.
And then we go, and if they want my help after the first edit, I'm more than happy to help them out with that. There have been startups that have gone through this process with me, learning about how to do digital storytelling, that have graduated our accelerator programs and then reached out to me recently and said, hey, I need the studio to do X, Y, and Z, came in, got all their footage without even needing my assistance, and left to, because they're rebranding and doing some new messaging with what they're doing. And so they needed to create some new content. But because they had these skills, they were able to just come in and do it, because Google for Startups provides this to the startup community.
Well, on that, that's interesting. Interesting thought, because something that I often think about as well is the shift from kind of production to or producing to being more educating and teaching other people how to do the work, right? And so I'm curious for you, do you see yourself shifting into that? I mean, I know I do. I see myself doing a lot more kind of shifting into like kind of supporting the next wave of mini me's or future me's, right? And teaching a lot more than I used to, and getting quite a lot of kind of satisfaction out of it, right? Like, you're still able to kind of scratch the itch and such. So curious if that applies to your world as well.
In general, like broadly, or just
with
entertainment and lighting and stuff.
Exactly. Your world with respect to this conversation around lighting.
Okay. So I still have that theater bug. I love the process of getting a script, going over it, and then when I have my initial meeting with the director, hopefully being on the same page by at least 70%. That's my goal, because if we're not 70% on the same page with ideas as to the script, maybe I missed something or they want to change my idea, that's cool. Then I'm just not right for it. But being able to be in an environment where my creative ideas are taken and they're used to help elevate a show, that's it. You can't, and watching, like what we said, the audience reaction, like that is just something that most people just don't experience. And I love scratching that itch. Cool. All right. Well, I don't want to take too much of your time. I know we only scheduled an hour.
Yeah. So, well, I'm happy to hop in again if ever helpful, but yeah, no, I mean, this was super, super fun. It was always it's always a pleasure kind of chatting with you about all the many things that we seem to have in common these days.
Thanks for making it all the way to the end of this episode of the podcast. This podcast is not sponsored in any way, so please like, share, and subscribe. I'll be releasing an episode every week, so make sure to come back for more. Thanks for listening, and stay creative.